So, come on down, the price is right. Can have, please. Okay, are we all ready? I think so. We'll get things going. It's 8:30 on day three of MEC. Now, I was a good boy last night. I was a good boy last night. I didn't go out too late. But I see some faces in this room that are bearing all the hallmarks of perhaps just having touched the demon drink last night. Anyway, I was at a very good function involving the Exchange MVPs and the product group, and it was very nice. So I've blogged about it, and we had a lot of fun. Anyway, I'm Tony Rebent, and today we're going to kick off MEC by talking about retention policies. And I hopefully will shed some light into this dark corner of Exchange. Well, it's not really dark, but I think a lot of people out there don't really understand what's going on. I'll try and talk a little bit about what happens behind the scenes and how you design these retention policies. And one of the things you're going to hear me say time and time again is the importance of communication, because you are going to be touching user mailboxes. It may have escaped your attention, but most users don't like when administrators or computers touch their mailboxes. Okay, so that's a bad thing. Okay, so here's what we're going to cover. We'll talk about what retention policies are. We'll talk about a design philosophy, how to design these things. We'll talk then about how retention policies are processed by Exchange, what happens behind the scenes, and we'll talk a little bit about some debugging and support. Okay, so that's all very nice. So let's talk about an overview. Microsoft started out this managed or messaging records management, MRM. They started out in Exchange 2007. And there were a number of difficulties with the implementation. I don't know if you guys use managed folders. I know there's a couple of very enthusiastic managed folders folks here. Congratulations, you're part of the 0.0002% of the user community who like them, but you know, Michael B. Smith likes them too, you know, so you have at least one friend. But the big problem with managed folders is that it forces users to change their work habits. You create folders, you push them out, and then you expect users to do something intelligent. Can you notice the problem here immediately? There's that little word called intelligence. Now, I love users. They don't like me very much, but I love them. But I don't expect them to do the right thing all the time. And you may lovingly create an audit folder for them and say, "Look, anything you want to keep for the audit, you put there." And they'll forget. They will forget. You can be guaranteed they forget. And that's a bad thing. So MRM 1, managed folders, has gone away now. It's gone away in 2013. It was tolerated in 2010, but it's gone away in 2013. So first big thing you need to do if you're planning a migration is you're going to need to remove the managed folder policy that you already have on those mailboxes before you move them over to Exchange 2013. The big thing about MRM in Exchange 2010 and 2013, MRM 2.0, is that things happen automatically. In other words, all of the processing of mailbox content is going to happen automatically behind the scenes. Users don't have to do anything if they don't want to. As we'll see later on, administrators can create tags inside policies that allows users to have some control over what happens, but essentially everything can happen automatically. And this is a great thing because it truly means that stuff can be cleaned out automatically and regularly. However, as I said earlier on, anytime you touch a user mailbox, they better know that you're going to touch it. So that comes back to the communication. Retention policies therefore need that buy-in from management, because there's all sorts of legal stuff, data retention laws, that kind of thing. users and IT to be effective. Don't just launch this on a Friday afternoon because you've read a blog article. This is a bad thing to do. It could be a career-limiting operation. On the other hand, if you want a fast exit from a company, be my guest. And of course, you need an enterprise CAL, but I don't think that's really too much of a problem because there's so many things in exchange that you need an enterprise CAL for that lots of people end up buying enterprise CALs anyway. Okay, the basic idea, two, is that retention policies are part of a set of other functionality that together give you compliance. So they are linked in a certain way with archive mailboxes, as we'll see. They're linked with holds, such as retention holds, litigation holds, and in-place holds. Because if you put a mailbox on hold, you don't want automatic processing in the background to remove stuff. There's this thing called single item retention that you can say is linked with it. And of course, e-discovery. So there's a lot, you've got to put it into context and say it's not just retention policies that we're talking about. You've got to look at the whole compliance picture and figure out for yourself what kind of compliance strategy you're going to have for Exchange. Basic idea. We have retention policies. And you can have tons of retention policies. You could, if you wanted to, have a retention policy for every user in your organization. Jim Smith's retention policy, Jane Doe's retention policy, etc., etc. It would be boring, though, because you'd have to set them all up, right? And you'd have to maintain them. So it's much easier if you come up with a small set of retention policies that meet the business needs of your organization. Each retention policy is going to be composed of a set of retention tags. Okay? And the tags tell Exchange what to do. Basically, there are two things. It's got to know the period, the retention period. How long after an item is created before I should do something? 30 days? 60 days? Whatever. The maximum is something like 67,000 days. But between you and me, you know, if you're keeping an item for 67,000 days, I probably don't want to know about it. Yeah? But you can do it if you want, right? And the second thing is the action that should happen. Now, there are two basic actions. One is delete, and the other is archive. And that gives us a differentiation in the types of tags. A set of archive tags, which do archiving, and a set of delete tags that do deletes. Deletes can either be delete now and permanently remove, or just move it into recoverable items, and the user can get back. So that's the basic idea. Once you've set up your retention policies, you assign them to mailboxes. And once a retention policy is stamped onto a mailbox, it becomes the center of attention for this thing called the Managed Folder Assistant, MFA. MFA is constantly running in the background on mailbox servers, and it's looking for mailboxes that need to be processed. They're going to be processed at least once a day, right? And the processing means that we take the tags in the retention policy that are applied to the mailbox and we action them. So we'll talk about that a lot more as we go through. As I said, you can have multiple retention policies within an organization, but really what you want to do is just have a minimal set that meet the needs of different user communities. And you will have different user communities because, you know, executives tend to have larger mailboxes. They also tend to be prone to regulatory requirements, right? So they may want to keep stuff longer than normal users. A normal user, and of course normal is a very bad thing to say to a user, let's say you, other people within the organization, is that a good way of saying it? Other people, you may want to have all of their mail removed after 30 days. You know, the clean mailbox policy kind of thing. So that again speaks to the need to think about the business requirement. And then you've got other guys like the audit managers. Clearly, they won't be too impressed if MFA comes along and cleans out their mailbox and removes everything that's needed for 5 years. So you have to think about it. So we talked a little bit about this before, a little bit more detail. The tags are different types. Exchange has a set of default folders, right? You know, the inbox, the sent items, those type of calendar, right? Those folders are always populated into a mailbox. And for each one of these default folders, you can have a single tag in a retention policy. So you have the inbox tag, the sent items tag, etc. Right? The next thing is that you can have a set of personal tags. Now, a personal tag is actually pretty powerful, because a personal tag, if you put a personal tag on a folder, or you put a personal tag on an item, it will override anything else. It is the highest priority tag. So for example, if you had something in mailboxes that you needed to keep, let's say for audit purposes again, and that positively should never be deleted, you would create a personal tag with a retention policy of never delete. And then you would allow users to go and place that on items. The best practice, though, is to restrict the number of personal tags. Why? Two reasons. First thing is users. If you provide a lot of choice to users, they'll get confused. You know, 22 things you can do to this item. Which one would you like me to do? Users will be confused. The second thing, of course, is that we have this little thing called user interface. Outlook, OWA, etc. They have a certain amount of space that's available to show these personal tags. So the best practice is keep it to less than 10. I'd probably go even further and say 6 seems to be about right. You know, maybe a tag, always keep this item, maybe a tag, delete immediately, maybe a tag to say something like keep for 5 years, something like that, or move to archive. You got to figure that out for yourself. And then the last thing we've got are default tags. Now think about the processing. We have sets of tags for all the default folders. We have personal tags that give us great control. But then there's a whole pile of other stuff in the mailbox. And that's what a default tag does. A default tag is used by MFA to know what to do for anything else that's not covered by a personal tag or one of the default folder tags. And you can have up to 3 of them, because there's one default tag that tells what I should do to move to archives. There's one default tag to say what I should do to delete stuff. And then there's one that deals with voicemail. And you may think, why is voicemail a special case? It's a special case because many companies are extremely sensitive about the retention of voicemail messages. Again, it goes back to the people issue. People are often very explicit in voicemail when they're not explicit in email. I've worked in a number of companies where it was common practice for executives to discuss very confidential information over the phone and leave voicemail for each other, stuff that they would absolutely never put into email. But now with things like unified messaging, that voicemail is being captured and indexed and everything by Exchange. So that's why we have a specific default voicemail tag to say, okay, how do you want me to deal with voicemail? You may have your normal tag which says remove everything out of the mailbox after 2 years. And then you have a specific voicemail tag to say remove any voicemail items after 3 days, which tends to be the kind of expiry period on classic voicemail systems. So that's the reason why that's there. Okay, let's talk a little bit about designing the retention policies now that we know that they're there. First question, what business purpose are your policies going to serve? There's no point here in IT making a home run on itself. You've got to work with the business. You've got to have a business policy behind it. And there's a good snapshot of what a very simple business policy is, but it's actually very informative. We need to keep all items for 3 years because those items might be required for audit. Right? And different companies and different industries will have different requirements. So that's the first thing we start off, have a business purpose. The next thing is, how are you going to implement the policy? For example, do you have the necessary clients? Because retention policies will work in the background because it's all done on the server. All the stuff about moving stuff out of mailboxes, it's happening on the server. But if you want to give people control over personal tags and that kind of thing, then you've got to have a client that can actually show those tags. And we're limited, as we'll see in a moment. What mailboxes are we going to cover? Is it everything? Is it just senior managers? Is it just people who work in the law department? Is it just sales representatives? Each policy needs to have a target. You need to be able to identify those mailboxes. And it's a good thing. Here's a good thing to do. You have to apply a retention policy to a mailbox to make it effective. I said that earlier. It can be boring going and finding 472 different mailboxes to apply this retention policy. You know all those custom attributes that Exchange has? There are 15 of them. Select one of those custom attributes and use it as a way of identifying people. You know, you can put something like senior manager, audit, legal, or whatever. And then it's a very simple PowerShell command to do a get mailbox, using that as a filter, and then do a set mailbox to apply the retention policy to those mailboxes. That's a little tip, okay? And that's what we're doing here. A couple other things. You might have software in place already that deals with retention or deals with compliance. If so, will the implementation of Exchange retention policies clash? Now, again, I don't know. There's lots of people in this room. There's lots of different companies represented. So really, I'm putting it out there for you to think about this. Is there any possibility that we might be clashing with something like a Vault product or an archive product or something like that? So think about it there. How will the need for the policy and its implementation be communicated? I think, remember, as I said earlier, we're dealing with user mailboxes. We're going to remove stuff from those mailboxes. Users won't like that, but they will accept it if you clearly explain to them the need. We are implementing retention policies because we need to comply with this regulation. This helps us comply with the regulation. You don't have to do anything. It will be all done automatically for you. If you're upfront about it and tell them what's going to happen, they're much more likely to accept it than if they come in on a Monday morning and find half of their mailboxes disappeared because you applied retention policies on Friday afternoon and MFA was a busy bunny over the weekend. Okay? So think about it. Will users receive any training? I think that's a good idea, especially if you're giving them personal tags. Effective mailbox management is not a skill that is born with us. You may have noticed this, right? Just look at some of the crazy folder structures that people set up. You know, and look at the dichotomy that we have in the industry today between the filers, those that put stuff into folders, and the pilers, who keep everything in the inbox, right? Now, have you helped those people at all? Given them personal counseling? Suggested that they should drink less? I don't know. But if you're putting in retention policies, I think it's a good idea to help them figure out, you know, by the way, we're giving you an archive mailbox. How are you going to use that effectively? By the way, we're giving you this power to control how your stuff is actually managed. When, for example, should I apply that retention tag that says keep for audit? When should I apply that retention tag that says never delete? That kind of thing. So you're helping them deal with the consequences of an action that IT and the business are now taking. Next thing, basic principles of retention policy. Every tag should have a purpose. That's another way of saying don't just gather up all the retention tags that are available to you and put them into a policy. That's not a design. That's a mess. Right? So think about the tags you're going to need. Decide straight up what default folders you're going to manage. Are you going to manage inbox? Yeah, pretty well everybody manages the inbox. And everybody manages the sent items folder. Calendar usedn't to be manageable in this way, but it is now. Deleted items. That's a way of just clearing out deleted items every 10 days or whatever. And then there's a whole pile of the utility folders, as I call them, such as PSS feeds and junk mail. This is just an opportunity to just clear those guys out on a regular basis so they're not cluttering up databases. Don't bother with sync issues. Why? Because sync issues is a client-side folder. It's Outlook clients that have synchronized issues, synchronization issues, not Exchange. And it's the Outlook client that keeps those synchronization logs in sync issues. MFA runs on the server. Those synchronization logs are not available to MFA. So you can go ahead and apply a policy to the folder. I'm not going to do anything, but be my guest. Okay. And contacts are not supported. Why do you think contacts are not supported? But why shouldn't I be able to manage contacts? Yeah, being yelled at, that's a good technical answer. Yeah, we'll buy that one. Yeah, it's definitely a bad thing to be yelled at, especially on a Monday morning. The answer is simple. Contacts tend to be long-standing. I've had contacts that are in Outlook that have been there for 15 years. There are people I met 15 years ago, and you know they don't really expire. Well, we all expire eventually, you know, but you know, at that point, I suppose it'd be good to remove the contact record for me. But you know, but apart from that, it's a bad thing to go and make assumptions about people's contact records based on their age. So that's why contacts is not processed. Now, when retention policies were originally introduced, all of the documentation suggested tag names like RPT-inbox-30, which meant this was a tag applied to the inbox 30 days. Only an IT person could love such a name. Okay? The problem here is that those names show up to users. So be my guest and put names like that if you want a whole pile of help desk calls. It's much easier to come up with user-friendly names that clearly define the purpose of the tag. Documents required for audit. Great tag name. Very easy to understand. If you want to, put the retention period on afterwards so the user understands that these documents are going to be kept for 5 years. Immediate archiving, 5 days. Very good. The user understands that any item marked with this tag will be archived after it is 5 days old. Simple stuff, right? For those, anybody here running multinational systems? One, okay. Well, what can I say? Localized tag names are supported, but only for Outlook. OWA, couldn't care. They're going to fix it, but they couldn't care at the moment. So pick good English names. So the question is, can a user search for stuff that they tag? No. No, they can't. Most users are going to be searching using Windows Desktop Search because they've got Outlook configured in cached Exchange mode. And Windows Desktop Search cares not a tad for retention tags. Doesn't know about them. Okay, some other stuff. Public folders aren't covered by retention policies. Neither the old stuff or the new stuff. Not covered. Why? Public folders are designed to be collaborative and they're designed to be shared. So you don't really want to have a single user coming along and applying a tag. You may want to have the folder user do it, and Microsoft are looking at that, but for now, it's not there. And site mailboxes are also not covered. The reason there is that they're under the control of the site mailbox policy, lifecycle policy in SharePoint. Okay, so now we know how to design, we know what to do, we can talk about how we implement. Basics. You have to be a member of compliance management. I'm sure you're all members of organization management because all administrators take the maximum permissions known to man, right? You wouldn't want to restrict yourself. No. Okay. Anyway, if you did want to restrict yourself, anybody who's a member of the compliance management ORBAC group can work with policies, right? So you determine the need for the policy and you've done your design. I think it's a good idea to actually write out a little chart. Just define your policy, business policy, the name of the policy, who it's going to apply to, and all the tags you need. And then you go and create them. And you can do that through EAC or you can do it through PowerShell. And then we'll assign the policy to mailboxes. As you can see here, well, people in the back might not see because you probably need new eyeglasses or something. But over there on the far side, we see all the tags that are associated with the selected policy in EAC. And there's quite a number of them, but that's okay. To assign retention policies to mailboxes, through EAC, you just go to the mailbox, select it, and go and edit mailbox properties, or mailbox features as you see here, and I'm selecting one of the policies that I can apply. It's very, very straightforward, but boring if you're doing it for more than one or two, which is where you use EMS. And what I've got here is a little snippet of PowerShell, get mailbox database DB1, find me all the users who have mailboxes on DB1, and then stamp those mailboxes with a particular policy. So a retention tag. Actually, I was wrong. It's only 24,000 days. I thought something else is 67,000. I think it's audit entries or something like that. But anyway, 24,000 days. So here we got all of the bits that you can see on the side. A retention tag defines a retention period up to the 24,855 days. And the action to apply, you can see all the ones. Typically, the ones that are used are delete and allow recovery, which means move it into the recoverable items folder, because users can get it back there if they want to. Delete permanently, goes away, shred. Move to archive, which is an archive tag. You've got to have an archive mailbox before that's available. And then mark past retention limit, which just means that it puts a strikeout mark through the item. That's not really very useful, I don't think. Tags can be used in multiple policies. They're not tied to a single policy. So you can create one policy, one tag, for example, for the inbox, delete everything after 30 days, and it can be used by the managers, it can be used by the audit department, the legal department, etc. It's not tied in any way. And as we said, tags can be localized. Now, you can have disabled tags. And you may think, why would I want to have a disabled tag? Well, it's a way, as it says there in the second bullet, of telling MFA to skip over processing this item. Okay? And remember that we have default tags in a mailbox, in a policy. And the default tag might say, any item that is not covered by any other tag is going to be deleted after 30 days. Then you may just want to have a situation where you have a set of items that don't have any sort of retention period on them, that are they're just going to be skipped. And this is the way to do it, is to create a disabled tag, which in fact has no retention period on it whatsoever. MFA will see this, and it will simply ignore it. Later on, you may want to come back and say, you know what, that tag that I gave to people, I actually need to put a retention period on it. And if you do that, MFA will then go back and reevaluate the items and start processing them. Okay? But that has consequences, of course, because things will start moving. Okay? Yes, sir.
Do those tags show up if they're disabled somehow?
Yes. They do. They're personal tags.
But users can see them. Yeah.
No, they can't. They can't because these are tags that are applied to default folders. Okay, only personal tags show up in the user interface. which is actually, I missed that point right at the bottom, is that sometimes a personal tag is a better way to do this, but you can have default disabled tags, which is the point I was trying to make, and badly. Now, let's talk about this. This is important. If you enable an archive mailbox, Exchange assumes that you want to use the mailbox. And it will therefore go and stamp that mailbox with a default policy that's provided in the product. The effect of this policy being stamped on a mailbox means, of course, that MFA is going to start to process stuff. The big issue you've got is this tag that exists in the default policy. See what it says there? Default 2-year move to archive. That means that you have now just stamped this mailbox with a policy that calls for every item older than 2 years to be moved into the archive. This leads to the disappearing items syndrome, where users get a get an archive, they're so happy, oh, I've got an archive. Look, a new resource to use. They get it on a Monday. Tuesday morning they come in, and half of their stuff is gone out of their mailbox. It hasn't gone. It's just been moved into the archive, because that's what you told it to do. You told MFA to do that. But the user doesn't understand it. And what do? They ring the help desk, because they don't know that they have to go and look at the archive. So the cautionary note here is to think before you enable archive mailboxes. Yes, sir. Okay, so I think the real question is, do I know if MFA has run on a mailbox?
Say the user did it themselves.
User can't do it themselves.
If they create a personal tag and move something into it, there's no audit trail that I can use.
Okay, that's correct.
If it says, you deleted all my email, how can I say, no, on this date at this time, you applied this personal tag?
So let me play that one back to you.
Sure.
I think the scenario you're outlining is that a user, for some reason known to them, looks at a personal tag which says move to audit, move to archive. And they apply it to a folder that they've got called things to do. And they just do that, right? Next morning they come in and there's nothing in things to do, because MFA has respected. They phone the help desk and says, where's things to do? Okay? The only answer you can get to them is, do you have an archive mailbox? We'll look in that. And this speaks to the user education when you give people personal tags. You have to explain to them that this is what's going to happen. If they make an explicit decision to put a personal tag on a folder or an item, MFA is going to process that item. User education is so important here. But to come back to this, there have been so many. This is the biggest item that I hear about from organizations. They hear about archive mailboxes. Archive mailboxes seem like a great idea. They go and implement it, and then they have a flood of help desk calls. So please, please, please think about this before you enable archives. And consider altering the default policy that's shipped with Exchange to change it. You might, for example, just disable that tag. Disable that tag just for a couple of months until people have gotten used to the archive, and then enable it. And that would work well. Okay. So behind the scenes, retention policies and tags, they're all stored in the Exchange configuration data in Active Directory, and you can go and have a look at them. That's how it looks like. This is ADSI Edit, Brain Surgery for Exchange and Active Directory. And what we've done here is we've just taken out the management retention policy, and those are all the properties. I just tell you that because it's interesting sometime to know where they are, and because if you're in a hybrid environment, you have a little bit of an issue here, of course. It's in your Active Directory. All these retention policies are in your Active Directory. They're not in the cloud's Active Directory. So some work is going to be needed to make sure that both cloud and on-prem mailboxes are processed in the same way, as we'll see slightly later. Clients. As I said earlier, all retention policies are processed in mailbox servers. All happens behind the scenes. Client support, really, any client is supported. OWA for Android is supported. You just won't see the retention tag show up. In terms of client support, it's when do I see policies? When do I see the tags? When can I interact with retention policies? And to do that, what you're going to need is Outlook 2010 Professional Plus, Outlook 2013, or Outlook Web App. And they are working on the mobile clients, but those are the ones where you see the retention policies so far, okay? And you have the ability to not only see them, but also set retention tags, those personal tags on items and folders. Here's an example of the UI. And if we look, what I've done here is I've clicked on the inbox folder. What's this guy here? Let's see. Pointer. Inbox folder. Right click, assign policy. Now, assign policy then brings up this list. And the list is split between archive and retention. Archive are all the personal tags that call for an archive action. Retention policy are all the personal tags that call for a delete action, right? And I could just select one of these and apply it to an item, and it'll go, and then MFA will process it. Okay? Simple stuff. Now, we talked about hybrid coexistence. This is where what we have to do. We've seen that our retention policies and tags are in Active Directory for an on-prem environment. Clearly, Office 365 is a multi-tenant. It's a massively scalable multi-tenant environment, but it knows nothing about what you do with retention policies in Active Directory. So what you've got to do is synchronize. And Microsoft has provided these scripts, export retention tags.ps1 and import retention tags.ps1, which you have to run. The on-prem servers naturally are always the master because stuff is in Active Directory. And really what you've got to do in a hybrid environment is make sure that you are exporting on a regular basis and importing on a regular basis to ensure that the same user behavior is seen on both sides. Because otherwise what will happen is that you take an on-prem mailbox, you move it to the cloud, there's no retention policies go along with that mailbox. Why? Well, there may be a retention policy noted in the mailbox properties, but when it gets to the cloud will look at the MRM policy and it'll say, doesn't exist here, can't process it. That's why you need to export and import. And it's a manual task, it's got to be done on a regular basis, and you've got to figure it out, okay? You also need, if you're in a hybrid environment and you're using managed folders, from Exchange 2007, you're going to have to move them before you remove them because the cloud doesn't know anything about MRM 1.0. And if you don't, MFA won't process the mailboxes. Okay, speaking about processing, gives me a nice moving along. How do we do it? Well, it's this guy, Managed Folder Assistant, that we've mentioned a couple of times. The basic idea of MFA, like all of the assistants that Exchange uses, is that it works on a work cycle basis. The work cycle defines the goal for processing mailboxes. In this case, the goal is to process every mailbox on a server at least once daily. That's the goal that's given to MFA. MFA will then look at the available system resources, and it will ramp up and throttle back its processing depending on available system resources. So late at night when the server is pretty well not doing much, there's going to be quite a lot of MFA processing going on. During the middle of the day, not so much. Okay? But the goal is to make sure that every single mailbox is processed at least once daily, or once daily in fact. Okay? The goal then of the MFA when it runs through a database. It does it on a database by database basis. It look for all the mailboxes in the folder that have retention policies, and it will then start processing those mailboxes. And as we know, the retention policies has all the tags. It'll start processing. It'll look for all the default folders, see what tags apply to them. So it'll do inbox, sent items, etc. It then look for personal tags. If it meets personal tags while it's processing, it'll apply that rather than the default tag. And then for anything else that's not covered by either a folder tag or a personal tag, it'll apply the default tag. So it's lots of processing going on. I mean, this can be a real lot of work, especially when retention policies are first applied. Is there a way to calculate how long? Not really. You can look in the event viewer and you will find out events. I think I have a slide coming up that shows you the event that you can see. And it will tell you when Managed Folder Assistant opens the database, starts processing mailboxes in the database, and then when it finishes. That's about it. So you could track it like that. The whole idea of MFA is that things happen automatically, which is good. There's a lot of goodness in that, you know, but I accept that you might want some control. And really, I think they have done a pretty good job of making sure that it can automatically scale up its processing and scale back depending on the demand that's on the server, right? Because it's looking at things like it knows how many mailboxes are on that server. So if it gets to, say, 2 o'clock in the morning and it knows that its cycle finishes at 6, it's got 4 hours left to do work, and it's still got 1,000 mailboxes to process, MFA will actually work. It'll correspond with the workload management that's part of Exchange to make sure it gets enough resources to do that work. Okay. I think, by the way, if you are applying retention policies for the first time, it is a good thing to do over the weekend because of the initial hit. Yeah, you know, that's just sensible. And indeed, here we go. There's the event. Okay? In this case, let's see, you can't read it. So this event just tells us that we've come out of a work cycle and what it's processed. So when it's processing a mailbox, it's looking for each item in the mailbox, and it's going to stamp them with the appropriate tag and the expiry date. So an expiry date is actually stamped on each item. The consequence of this, of course, is that we're creating transaction logs as well, because this is a transaction. Items are actually modified. And then once it's got a retention expiry date stamped on an item, it's going to look and make sure whether or not the item now exceeds the retention period. If it does, it will take whatever action is defined in the tag. Okay? Here's an important thing. MFA has to process a mailbox at least once before the personal tags will show up in the user interface. That's logical, yeah? Because, you know, out of the box, Outlook or OWA knows nothing about retention policies. It doesn't know what's going to be used. So the very first time that MFA goes through and processes a mailbox, it will create a hidden item in the mailbox route that contain details of the policy that applies to the mailbox. In terms of date calculation, in most instances, it's pretty simple. The expiry date for an item is calculated from its creation date. So that's pretty simple date calculation, right? Unless an item is stamped with a personal tag, MFA may recalculate its expiry date. So let's take a scenario. I have an item in my inbox. The tag for the inbox says delete after 30 days. MFA processes the inbox, stamps that item with a retention period of 30 days forward. Okay? I now apply a personal tag to the item, which says don't delete or delete after 5 years. The next time MFA comes through, it will notice that a personal tag now applies to that item. A personal tag is superior to a default tag. is superior to a folder tag. So we'll then recalculate and restamp the item with a different expiry date. Is clear? Okay, and that's what it says there. Now, how do you know when things are working? Well, you could just hope. That's a well-known principle of server management. Just hope that things work. This is a really easy way of figuring out. You can do it on your own mailbox, which is, of course, a great thing to test this kind of destructive kind of processing on, right? Always use your own mailbox. So select a mailbox, not a test mailbox. It's got to have some reasonably aged content because you're dealing with dates. So you want to have something that's got stuff that's a couple of years old, stuff that's a couple of months old, stuff that's relatively new. Different characteristics. Okay? You then check what's there. Have a look before you apply. And go and assign the retention policy to the mailbox. Now, at this point, you could sit back and have a number of cups of coffee and wait for MFA. But it's probably a better idea to run the start manage folder assistant commandlet to kick off MFA specifically for the mailbox that you have just stamped with a retention policy. Okay? That should happen reasonably quickly. Then what you can do is start up Outlook. And the test to see that the mailbox has been processed is that there are retention tags now available in the user interface. You could also use OWA for this as well. If you see the retention tags, you know the mailbox has been processed. If the retention tags don't show up, you know it hasn't been processed because those retention tags are created as a hidden item the first time MFA successfully processes a mailbox. Okay? And then, of course, you might want to just check to see whether or not the processing has worked. But I'm sure it will. In terms of amending policies, which, you know, nobody is probably going to get a policy right first time. And you're probably going to do it several times. You're going to be playing around with policies before you're ready to go into production. So, of course, this is the thing you do in test systems. It is best to test, assess, and refine before you actually introduce into production because MFA does some heavy-duty processing. You know, if you're just testing MFA on a mailbox server that's supporting 4,000 mailboxes, that's a lot of testing. You're probably better off doing it on a test mailbox server with a smaller group just to make sure that you're getting the results that you want. And in this case, the results that you want are results that meet the business need. Okay? Any change that you are forced to make in tags or policies is going to cost some processing cycles because MFA is going to have to reevaluate stuff. So if you update a retention tag, you update it by saying, oh, gee, you know what, the inbox, we really should keep inbox items for 60 days. Well, now MFA is going to have to reevaluate every item in every inbox and restamp those items with a new expiry date. Okay? So the basic message here is test, get it right on a test server, and then go and put it into production because of the processing that could be incurred. Now, there's a thing called retention holds. Right? Exchange supports a number of different types of holds. We've got retention holds, we've got in-place holds, we've got legal holds, or litigation holds. In all of these cases, MFA has got to be aware of what to do, and it is aware of what to do. A retention hold is intended to suspend MFA processing for a set period. The simple thing to think about is somebody is ill. Unfortunately, they're ill. You know they're going to be out of the office for a month or two. If you didn't suspend MFA processing, their mailbox is going to continue to be processed. So new items are going to come into the mail inbox, and they're going to be there, and they're wait there, and they wait there, and they wait there, and MFA comes along and says, oh, my retention period here is 30 days. Stamp it 30 days, 30 days, 30 days, 30 days. 30 days goes by, and those items which have never been seen by the recipient are now being deleted. They're being moved on. So a retention hold is designed to deal with this type of situation. It basically just says to MFA, hold on a minute. I don't want you to process this mailbox between this date and that date. Okay? Or indeed, indefinitely, if that was the case. So when a retention hold is in place, MFA will process the mailbox. It'll look at it, but it'll say, oh, okay, hold on a minute. There are some retention properties in place here that are stopping me working. So I'll just go on to the next mailbox. You can, in fact, use this as a warning period prior to the full introduction. What does that mean? Well, what it means is that you could put all of your mailboxes on retention hold. And then you could gradually introduce policies. And users would start to see the policies show up, but nothing was happening in the background. You'd just be giving them warning. You say, in 15 days' time, we're going to turn this on. In 7 days' time, we're going to turn this on. In 2 days' time, we're going to turn it on. Tomorrow, we're going to turn it on. And then you run the little PowerShell script to turn it on by just releasing the retention hold on all the mailboxes. Okay? And you can only do it through EMS, as you can see it there. There's the command. Okay, so that's retention holds. Litigation holds are a different matter. Litigation holds are intended to deal with the situation where we need to make sure that information is absolutely retained to meet the requirements of a discovery action or some similar legal action. So again, think about it. You don't want MFA doing stuff behind the scenes that the user isn't permitted to do up front with Outlook or OWA. So a litigation hold is intended to preserve information that would otherwise be removed, right? MFA continues to process the mailbox, continues to look at items, but it knows that the mailbox is in litigation hold because, again, some properties are set. And it will make sure that if it has to delete anything, it will hold copies of those items in the purges folder. The reason why they're in and purges is a subfolder of recoverable items. They're indexed, they're discoverable, they can be found by e-discovery searches. So therefore, they are available for the purpose of legal discovery. Okay? And that's the way it works. The reason why I've got this thing on the bottom of hold is effective after Active Directory is replication completes. You see this warning come up anytime you set one of these properties to say, this hold might not be effective for up to 60 minutes. And that's because Microsoft are being ultra cautious. It's going back to the bad old days when Active Directory replication really might take 60 minutes across an organization. And what it's really saying is that we're going to stamp some properties in this user's mailbox. Those properties are maintained in Active Directory. To be truly effective across an organization, we have to replicate every domain controller. That's all it's saying. Okay? So in most organizations, holds are going to be effective pretty well immediately because of the state of play of Active Directory replication that we have now. So to apply a litigation hold, here you go. It can be set through EAC or EMS, and the properties that are set on the mailbox are these ones. The hold owner, who set the hold? Because, you know, this is something that really should be done under the authorization of the legal department or some other management. I mean, it's not a thing that an administrator wakes up on a Friday morning and says, hey, Joe Smith's mailbox hasn't been under a litigation hold for a while. I think I'll put him on there. You know, that's not a good thing. That's not a good thing. So we need to know who set the hold date, when it was initiated, the fact that it is enabled, and then some retention comments and a URL, which will show up in Outlook's backstage. You know, that's the info part of Outlook that you see. And that's just to inform the user that, by the way, you are under litigation hold. You may or may not want to set those particular properties. You may not care to tell a user that they're under litigation hold. You may not want to worry them. But in some cases, you are forced to by law. You can set a hold duration. That's a new feature. It wasn't there in 2010. Okay. So moving on. And then there's in-place holds. In-place holds are the new form of hold, which was introduced in 2013. And this is the hold that basically says that we have a scope. We set a scope for the items that we are interested in. A retention hold and a litigation hold puts everything on hold. An in-place hold can set a scope. In other words, it can say, I'm only interested in these particular types of documents. Find me all the documents that meet, that are authored by Contoso, that are to do with the Fabricam patent lawsuit, and mention the word Tweety Bar, because Tweety Bar is the code name for that special super secret product that we're suing Fabricam about. Okay? That's a query. It's a query that you can feed into Exchange. And what that will mean then is that Exchange will evaluate items as they're deleted. And if those items, as they're deleted, meet the criteria for the in-place hold, they will be captured and retained. And MFA will respect those. It won't get rid of those items that are retained afterwards. Okay, a little bit about now about support and debugging, and then we'll have some time for questions. There are always questions. Most common implementation problems, what are they?
Deleting your mail.
Yeah, deleting your mail, yeah. But that comes back to the bullet there. If you enable retention policies without communication with users, they will be upset because it does delete their mail. Now, this is not a new problem. Some of you may have noticed that I have some gray hair. I have accumulated this gray hair, every strand of it, through dealing with user problems. That's my answer anyway. And I remember a long, long time ago, we had a product in digital called All-in-One. It was one of the first enterprise email servers. And gee, we thought probably at the end of the 80s, I think I was working in Turin, Italy at the time in an engineering group, and we were very smart people. We knew we were smart people. Heck, you know, we were engineers. And we wrote this routine which would clean up user mailboxes in All-in-One. It was kind of like this, but we hadn't got the intelligence that this kind of stuff has, because there was no concept of policies and there was no concept of separate types of tags or anything like that. And you know what? We ran it one Saturday, and we managed to clean mailboxes. The only thing is we removed every single item out of every single mailbox. And you know what? There wasn't a recoverable items folder in those days. It was a case of, where are those big 1600 BPI tapes, and how long is it going to take to restore these backups? That's what happens when engineering goes bad. But, you know, joking apart and all that, yeah, MFA is going to delete stuff. So you got to communicate to users. Please, please, please communicate to users. The second problem, as I said earlier on, is this one about enabling archive mailboxes without realizing the consequences of enabling that policy. So I think I've hammered that one home. And then the third one. This is very common. People mix up the time periods for archive and default. Now look at this. If you say that your default delete tag calls for a 2-year retention, and your default archive calls for a 5-year retention, what happens? It never gets to the archive. There you go. Here you go. Well done. Yeah, I'm not taking these home. They weigh a ton. Yeah, I'll autograph that. But that's how many people does this happen to that they go and enable this type of tag arrangement? Again, think about how MFA is working. It gets to an item. There's no other tag that defines it. So it applies the default tag. And it says, default, delete, 2 years. So you now got a whole bunch of items that have got 2-year delete expiry dates on them. After 2 years, they go away. They never have a chance to get to the archive. You have an extremely clean archive, and you have clean mailboxes. May not be what you want. So that's a bad thing. Second thing, a little bit of debugging. I've already said that one way of finding out whether a retention period has been applied to a mailbox is just to use Outlook or OWA and see do the tags show up. But I know this is a very technical audience, and you like getting your fingers dirty and your hands dirty and everything else dirty. So One way of doing this is to go and have a look at the FAI item. How would you do that? You'd use MFC Mappy, which is a great tool for finding out behind-the-scenes stuff with Exchange. Now, here's the thing. You have to run MFC Mappy with the Outlook profile configured for online mode, because otherwise it won't look at the stuff that you need to look at, which is the stuff that's in the server mailbox, right? And what you can do is you go and navigate down through, and you'll find this thing called an IPM configuration.mrm. And if you look at this wonderful tag, you know, Mappy is a wonderful interface. It's the most understandable tagging mechanism known to man. PR roaming XML stream, just what I would have guessed. You will find all this stuff. You see it? There you go. User configuration, info version, Exchange 14. So that's when it was created. Data, retention hold enabled is false. See all the retention stuff? And down here you've got some tags. Name, keep 10,000 days. Comment, type equals personal. You know this is a personal tag to keep 10,000 days. So that's where you find all that stuff out. Okay? Some useful EMS one-liners, because we're at an Exchange conference and nothing is complete without some PowerShell to bore. Anyway, so how you find all mailboxes that have a retention policy set? Very, very simple. Get mailbox. Notice I'm using dash filter. Why am I using dash filter? Come on, come on, come on. No, you don't qualify. No, you don't qualify. Bloody PowerShell expert puts his hand up. No, go away. Sir. What?
It's faster.
Why is it faster?
Because it's processed by the server.
There you go. Because it's a server-side search. Yep, there you go. One more for you. Take one off that. Yeah, that's right. If you're dealing with a lot of mailboxes, use filterable properties whenever possible, because it'll come back, the information will come back a lot faster. All right? In this case, all we're doing is get mailbox. We're looking to find out whether a retention policy is set to null or not. Next one. To set a retention policy on all your friends that have not yet been processed by MFA. Okay? Same type of thing. Get mailbox, right? But we're only getting user mailboxes. So I've got the recipient type details there. And then set mailbox and just stamp it with a policy. Simple stuff. Locate all mailboxes that are on retention hold. Now, this can take a long time because that's not a filterable property. Okay, so that speaks to that thing. You know, retention policy is, retention hold enabled is not a filterable property. So it takes a long time. But you can do all that. So after that whiz-bang wallop trip through retention policies and tags and all that stuff and the wonders of MFA, we conclude. Retention policies, they can be a critical part of managing compliance. I think they are. I think they're pretty good because there's an awful lot of automation. But the key to automation always is that you set things up right first. And then you let automation have its day. Don't expect machines to automate themselves. They don't do a very good job of it. Don't expect Exchange to automate itself. It doesn't do a very good job of it, as we've seen in the situation where it automatically applies a default archive policy, which leads to disappearing mailboxes. So that's a bad thing. I think it is relatively easy, as we've seen, to go to design, create, and deploy. But at the end of the day, unless you've got that user buy-in, this isn't going to work, because you'll end up with so many help desk calls and so much user pushback, it's not going to be worth it. Okay, that's all I had planned to say. Clearly, the nice people who are running this extremely fine conference would like you to fill out evaluations. But let's do some questions. I've still got three books to give away, so three best questions. Come on, up you go. It might be the three first questions.
I've actually got two, if you don't mind.
You want two books?
Oh, sure. Huh. So we're still keeping...
They sell for $10 on eBay.
Too heavy to take home. We're still keeping MRM1 around, even though we're on Exchange 2010, because we had the lovely experience where the inbox-only switch doesn't work in MRM2, and it deleted... I tested it on myself, so it deleted about 20,000 items. Mm-hmm. So now I have a big folder called old. I had to dump it all back in again.
Okay.
So what we want, what we have, is 60 days on three default folders, inbox, sent items, deleted items. We do not touch the subfolders. That's their safety zone.
With MRM1.
With MRM1.
Right.
So we tag just those three, which it does not appear to me from looking at what I've seen with MRM2 that it's possible to do without touching the subfolders. We don't want to archive. We don't want to hit subfolders. And I would love not to have those tags, but I have a feeling that's not optional.
Yeah, this question, that's a good question. You definitely get booked for that. See, these fine people asked the question the other day, you know, but what can I say? Limited time offer. You can grab one. You can grab one, please. So the situation is that I think we're in a time where you've got two very distinct architectures. The first architecture, managed folders, is all based around you pushing out a set of default folders to users and then you expecting users to populate items in there, which would be retained.
No, it is the default folder in Outlook, right?
We're
creating separate folders.
Right, but I mean, that's the basic idea behind it, you know. It can be summarized that it is user-driven.
Right. They leave it alone, it gets
with managed MRM2, it's a whole different ball game. And you now got this different setup of all these different type of retention tags collected in a policy intended to automate things much more, right? Now, I was asked the question the other day, could I have a subfolder under the inbox and what would happen to it? What would MFA do? And the answer, of course, is that a subfolder is just a repository under another folder. And if a tag is applied at the top level of the hierarchy, it'll be inherited all the way down. How can I get around that? The answer is you use personal tags. So you have a subfolder under the inbox. You place a personal tag on it, like don't delete or whatever you want. Then that will override the inherited tag. But the problem, as we discussed, see, I do remember all this stuff. The problem, as we discussed there, is that it's manual. The user has to do it. They have to create, there's no pushing of folders and all the rest of it. So it's a different mechanism. And you know what? Some pain is going to be taken by users moving from MRM1 to MRM2.
And there's no inheritance, right?
No.
You have to tag each folder?
You're going to, if you set up four different subfolders under the inbox, you'd have to put a tag on each one.
But I mean, if I create folders under that,
they will inherit the personal. Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That's my understanding anyway. But I would test. I'd test. Otherwise, you might experience the same type of problem you had earlier.
It was a surprise.
Oh, yeah. Well, 20,000 items between friends, it's nothing.
Now, somebody the other day said that you could.
Let's have decorum here.
Tony, just
Paul.
Two quick questions. Will the MFA back off if it realizes that transaction log disk space is low?
So a question, will MFA back off if transaction log growth is, what, if we're running out of disk space?
So it generates transaction logging for all the actions that it's taking? If it's low on transaction log disk space, does MFA realize that and stop processing?
That's not a function of MFA. That's going to be a function of the store. So that's where this thing like loose truncation, for example, in 2010 SP1 would come in. Or, in fact, I think what will happen if we start running out of space. Well, first thing, this should never happen on a well-managed system such as your own. But second, if it did happen, you're going to have things like Active Manager starting to flag errors, and you're going to have stuff showing up in the Crimson Log. And at that stage, well-founded administrators such as yourself would leap into action and free up the disk space. I really think this is just a store issue, and it's not an MFA issue. MFA is just one of these threads that's running. It's just going to do its stuff.
Thanks. The second question actually came in on Twitter.
On Twitter?
Yeah. They just wanted to know what the delete action does, whether it deletes or moves to deleted items.
So there's two. There's move to delete items or permanently delete. Permanently delete is like a hard delete. Move to delete item means it goes into the recoverable folder, recoverable items folder, and can be recovered from there. However, that being said, of course, if you've got single item recovery enabled on the mailbox, even a hard delete is going to be retained in the recoverable items purges subfolder for the retention period that's set on the either the mailbox or the database.
Great, thank you.
Okay. We would take those. You don't see them, but I do. There's folks at the back, and then we'll come to you.
If you have a second default tag, one of them is for voicemail?
Yes. No, it's a second default tag. It's a specific tag for default tag for voicemail. Is that what we're talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
Is there a way to keep end users from applying a personal tag to those voicemail items to override that?
No.
That default tag?
No. No, a personal tag is meant to be all-powerful because in that case what you've got is a user has made an explicit decision that they, for example, want to keep this voicemail. It's important to them. It may be required to meet an audit. It may be required for some other legal purpose. So they do that by placing a personal tag on it. And if you remember the evaluation criteria that MFA is going to use, first thing is it's going to do the folders. Second thing is going to do default, and the third thing, which overrides everything, is the personal. Personal wins every time.
So if our business need is to get rid of voicemail at 15 days, no matter what, is there any way to?
Yeah, well, the way I would do that is clearly you're going to have a default tag to delete voicemail after 15 days, and then in the policies that you apply to the mailboxes, you're going to give them no personal tags. If they don't have personal tags, they can't interfere.
Okay.
Is that fair? Sir?
Is there any way to set a policy on an archive mailbox, an MRM policy on a default mailbox? I have a need to archive, to remove items from an archive mailbox after X number of years.
Well, the policy applies to the archive mailbox. So let's take the example I had up there about the clash between the default tags for delete and archive. And the delete at that stage was 2 years and the archive was five. So let's switch that and say the delete is now 5 years and the move to archive is two, which is the proper way of, about it. So what MFA will do is it will move all items to the archive after 2 years. And after the items are 5 years old, they will then be removed from the archive because the archive is just a mailbox. It's just an extension of your mailbox.
That's not the way we figure that it works. That's not the way we've experimented. It doesn't work that way.
That's the way it's supposed to work.
Archive mailbox don't delete. They're considered forever, and you can't apply personal.
Oh, no. And Mr. Hauslauer is shaking his head there, and he's done a lot of work in this area. Maybe the two of you guys should talk and maybe compare your tests. Okay, thank you. Ma'am.
If my question is not about the retention policies, can I still ask it?
I'm not very good at fashion questions or you know, thoughts of the day, U.S. politics, but I'll try anything, most anything else.
Okay. Can I use a wildcard certificate if SSL offloading is done on a third-party device? Sorry, it's not a fashion question.
All the MVPs up here are laughing. You just give. I think, why don't you come down to the MVP corral and we'll sort you out there, okay? Rather than doing it here because it's really not this stuff. Sir, at the back. Yeah.
Oh.
Sorry, ma'am.
I just have a phone.
I know, but yeah, come up here and see the lights that they're blinding. And I'm old.
Other fuchsia next time. Okay. So my question is more about the litigation hold.
Yes.
So some of our managers are thinking, you know, I'm in a hybrid environment, so some accounts are in Office 365.
Right.
So they're thinking, well, you know, it might be a good idea to put all the mailboxes into litigation hold. Then we don't have to do recovery. Even if people delete items, because we have an infinite number of disk space, we're paying this much for Microsoft for the storage. So why do we need these limits? Let's just put everyone on litigation hold. So I was like, well, I have to think about that. Let me get back with you, you know. And I want to say, well.
You want a quote?
What?
You want a quote? You want medicine for these people?
Yeah. And I have to get them an answer like on Friday. So, you know.
Yeah, I mean, so before attempting to answer this, you know, I think the really important thing is to understand what business reason is driving this discussion.
Sloth.
What are they, huh?
Sloth.
Well, you know, because
laziness is not a business reason.
No, because in our, I think it has something to do with all the years, like they have always been spending a lot of money for this space and storage and recovering, and then why do we have all these limits? Why can't we just put, like, keep things forever?
They can keep things forever. They can keep, yeah. I mean, but they don't have to use litigation hold. I mean,
okay.
You know, an easier way of doing this is to put a huge retention period on the mailboxes or database, and then enable single item recovery. Because single item recovery will make sure that no item deleted out of a mailbox is permanently removed from the database until its retention period expires. So if you put a retention period of 17 years, all that will happen is that the recoverable items folder will grow and grow and grow. Mm-hmm. And they will have to eventually update the recoverable items quota, but they can keep everything for as long as they like. You know, there's nothing in life for free. But again, I go back to what is the business reason for this? And do you really want to keep some of the email that comes in for years and years and years? Because I don't think that's a good approach. I think a better approach is to have an intelligent discussion about helping to identify the email that's really required and focus on keeping that through an effective retention policy. But there's all sorts of games you can play.
Okay. All right. And when I talk to them, it will help if I have a book to show them.
Yeah, actually, Jason has a great, great, great remark for you there. Just beat them soundly over the head with the book, and it'll solve all the problems. Okay, I'm getting a red blinking light here, which means I have to stop, but we'll take one last question. That's you.
All right.
Hey.
So,
congratulations.
First thing is, can you confirm or deny or have any idea about whether the ELC assistant calendar task retention enabled registry hack, well, maybe not hack, but it still works in 2013.
I cannot confirm, deny, or otherwise say that I have any knowledge of any hacks that exist in anything to do with Microsoft software, because it's all perfect.
All right.
In other words, I haven't got a foggiest clue. What does Google Search say?
It tells me that Ross hasn't updated his article since 2010, RU4.
I wish I could say that I was gifted with the ability for a total recall of everything that's ever been published on the ELO blog. I don't know.
No, I'm just curious if you happen to run across or not.
Haven't run across
it.
What?
The second part of that?
Good Lord.
Not really that. Do you happen to know if a disabled tag works on default folder items or if it has to be applied as part of
It's got
to
be
personal.
A personal tag.
Okay.
Personal
Thanks.
Tag. Okay. Thank you very much, and I hope you have some great sessions for the rest of MEC. I really enjoyed MEC yesterday. I was at five superb sessions, and I hope you have the same luck today.